Do not fear the science. The science is good. Mm-hmm. Some of the extrapolations are not. We as Christians have no need to fear the science. Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Fred Williams.
And I'm Doug McBurney. Fred, it's October 31st, and I know what everybody's thinking. It's Reformation Day. It's Reformation Day. But, Fred, bigger than that, it's the final day of our telethon to stay on the air on KLTT AM 670, the 50,000-watt blowtorch for the gospel, right there in Denver, Colorado. And we need people's help. Folks, if you want to advertise your business or your product, you can advertise, you can sponsor a show for $200, you can sponsor a whole month for just $800 a month, you can subscribe to the RSR Archives, go to the store, buy some of our products. We're not going to take up a lot of your time because we know you have Reformation Day plans, but it is the final day of the telethon, so help us stay on the air, $20,000. If you can write that one check right now, please do that. Okay, now Fred, what do we got for Reformation Day?
So for Reformation Day, we have joining us in the studio, Dwayne Bartley.
Wow.
It's an honor to have you here, Dwayne. So he's a researcher who's been challenging mainstream science for quite a long time. I've heard you give a talk at Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship. You're now the vice president. And I just had to have you on the radio because people need to know about you. You've done so much research. You know, like every little crevice and corner of really science in general. And we're going to talk today about the dangers of settled science, and I'm just looking forward to hear what you have to say about it. And I know, Doug, you mentioned something off-air about peanut allergies, and I think that plays in. There's a recent study on that, right?
Yes. And now, Dwayne, before we get to that, we also want to point out that Dwayne earns a living in the real world as an electrical engineer making products that people actually buy. So he doesn't work for a think tank or a university or he works in the real world.
I was going to say, I actually have to earn it. No, don't say that. Currently I am building a power plant that keeps our men and women in uniform safe downrange. And so it's a big deal. And most of my career has been in failure analysis. So I have spent a long time looking at quote unquote settled science. And from a failure analysis standpoint, it's not an intuitive field, failure analysis. There's a lot of things where you go, wait, follow that either backwards or forwards in time. Follow that through the process of cause and effect. That breaks down and it's hard. And like I said, it's not intuitive. People have a very difficult time looking at it. They can take a snapshot and go, I can explain this picture. Well, when you back the picture out, well, when you play the film forward, when you play it backwards, now your theory doesn't work. And so, I've spent 20 years researching. I spent about the last 5 teaching it. As you said, my daughter calls it a vast expanse of useless knowledge. It's not useless. She's told me repeatedly. I never said useless, but it is a vast expanse of curious knowledge.
Speaking of failure analysis, let's look at the last several decades of the civilizational response to the rise in childhood allergies. Apparently, before 2015, this is an article I got. CBS News is quoting a study. But for the last several decades, maybe you've noticed that kids have peanut allergies. Not just kids, but lots of people. They have peanut allergies.
Yeah, and never used to be a thing. Good grief. When I was... way back in the dark ages, I think, the planes didn't have propellers. Some of them did. But they used to serve peanuts on the aircraft when you got on board.
Yes.
Nobody had peanut allergies. Now that's like, apparently you could drop an airplane out of the air with peanuts if you serve them on board.
Yes.
So I'm with you.
And that's something I noticed. And I don't know about you, Fred, but when I was a little kid, I didn't know anybody with really any allergies that I can think of. Maybe they had some secret allergies, but No, certainly you're absolutely no peanut. Right.
I can't think of any. And it's interesting because both of my kids have a tree nut allergy. Now, it's different than a peanut allergy, but they both have
that's a legume. Allergies. That's a bean. Yeah.
Yeah. So they, yeah. And they have to have, you know, they have their EpiPen. And my daughter's not quite as good as my son at avoiding it. And so I've been with her, taking her to the hospital because she's having a reaction.
Wow. Yes, yeah. Yes.
That has to be terrifying.
She's had to use her EpiPen like 3 times. She's starting to get a little bit better, but like she'll, like some kind of Indian dish or something that doesn't, you wouldn't know has tree nuts in it because it's like a, you know, a sauce. And she's like, uh-oh, and then have to rush her to the hospital.
So, Doug, what is the, if I read that right, the report was talking about, because I saw the same thing. I was up early this morning and I saw that and was like, that's really strange. And you know, it seems to me everybody's saying, oh, keep kids away from it, and it's always this thing they try and
Well, that's the thing, is that apparently for the last several decades the expert opinion has been keep infants away from peanuts. And for whatever reason, that's the advice that doctors, allergists, pediatricians have given parents for the last several decades. Well, there was a study done in 2015 that proved clinically with a real trial that if you exposed infants to peanuts, you could dramatically reduce the incidence of allergy later in life. And that study has influenced a significant amount of guidance from doctors for about 10 years now. And the data's in. It works. Expose your kids to peanuts early. And the doctors say, don't have them tested. Don't freak out about it. Just give them a little bit of peanuts when they're little, and they'll probably develop a tolerance and will reduce allergies. The data's in. It works. And when you read the article and look at why did we accept the advice to keep our kids away from peanuts, and there doesn't seem to be a reason, Dwayne. It seems like somebody said it was an expert's opinion, and everybody just said, oh, well, it's the expert's opinion.
The expert settled science.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like, well, somebody was near water and drowned. Well, the answer to that is don't go near the water. Hold on. You know, besides, I'm pretty sure that's some form of child abuse. If you remove peanuts from a kid, where does the peanut butter and jelly sandwich come from? I mean, that's child abuse right there.
Right?
That's just, you're no longer qualified to be a parent if your kid can't have a PB&J. I'm done.
I'm sorry. America was built on peanut butter and jelly. And so, yeah, there's something wrong with it. We should have known. We should have had some suspicions there.
It should just be a natural dislike, because there's certain people that don't like certain kinds of foods. If Ryan was here right now, he'd tell you, hey, look, I don't have a peanut allergy, but I hate peanut butter. So,
we have a kid
that hates peanut butter.
I have a brother-in-law who says he can't stand cheese, but he likes pizza. And I have to go, wait. Or it's tomatoes. It might be tomatoes. I apologize. It might be tomatoes. I was like, wait.
I wonder, and I want both of you to address this. I think it's quite possible that the reason the expert's opinion was accepted so nonchalantly was just an incidental misreading of creation versus evolution. So if you don't look at our immune system and our bodies as a created system designed for a purpose, and you look at it as an accidental hodgepodge of parts that just evolved by chance, you might not understand that the immunologic response is best built up by exposing the person to small amounts. You might not understand the immune system if you think it just evolved, is what I'm trying to say. And that's just dumb.
And, you know, like you said, you have the smartest audience, so they'll hopefully forgive me for a bit of this, but that's happens a lot. That's where the arrogance of science, and especially medicine, comes in. It's like, well, we can't trust the body. We need to take that over and run it intelligently. So the intelligent thing is to remove peanuts from the environment. And there's so much more that goes into. You know, we've virtually sterilized the world of an infant. When I was a kid, you had to have a tablespoon of dirt daily, guaranteed. You know,
it's absolutely.
Like, I mean, my parents also said go play in the intersection, but it never made me allergic to cars, so it might play a role. But you look at that, and they say we need to take this over, and they never stop to realize, hey, the immune system is an amazing system. I mean, you really break that down. I mean, from platelets on out, the body's ability to do that, and if you don't give it the smorgasbord of, hey, this is what's in the world, and you need to learn what that is and react to it. God built an amazing immune system.
There's the problem. That's the problem right there, is that the majority of people educated in the public schools and the public universities, we got to the point where we didn't think about God first. And so we end up with some expert. I mean, I don't know how many children have died from anaphylactic shock from peanut allergies, but it's a significant number. And it goes back to some expert who didn't really mean to do all that harm, but because of a civilizational shift away from God first and understanding creation and just knowing that we were created, we end up like this. And that's the danger of expert opinions and settled science. That's what I'd like to talk about. I'd like to hear from both of you about the dangers of all of that.
Yeah, I agree with you. The dangers of settled science. Somebody says something, and I think, I guess we kind of talked about this, but one of the sources of this problem is that I don't think there's many nefarious people. There are. Make no mistake. There are people who are out there that have a deliberate, intended desire to eliminate God. Okay, but there's a lot that they want to study something, and they have a brilliant mind, and they go about it. And they believe and often do know a great deal about the science they study, right? And they know their science so well that, assuming it's true, they say, I've done my research. I know how this works. I can cause and effect, make things change to the betterment, right? And they say, I know my stuff so well that, well, you know, I hear from the biologists that this is how life works. And I listen to the astronomers, and they know theirs. So I assume, and it's not an irrational assumption, I assume that I know my stuff well because I'm passionate about it. This is what I do. They do too. They must. Otherwise, they wouldn't be in it, right? And so they piggyback this whole thing, and it winds up being the string of dominoes that, in the end, all lay upon each other. And they don't actually know. They build on what other people say is settled science.
And, you know, an example that comes to mind for me was an email exchange I had with a guy named Dr. James Crow. He wrote prolifically for Nature magazine.
Okay.
That's not a creation magazine, right?
No.
And he said something really interesting, because I had always heard about how scientists will say, well, you know, in my field of science, there's not a lot of evidence for evolution, but there sure is in all the other fields. And he had written a lot of articles on the mutation rate and how we can't sustain it. And how do we even exist right now with the mutation rate? And I asked him, well, you know, why do you believe in evolution? And he said, well, because the other sciences support that, you know, astronomy, just like you said, geology, other fields. This guy was a geneticist. His major field was biology, and he could not defend evolution from his field.
No, and when they try, they often do that. They say, well, that's a smart person, and they said, so therefore I trust them.
Exactly.
And they put their trust in man. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know where that goes. It's like evolution, you know, one of the things I wanted to just throw out there, molecules to man, right?
Yeah.
From goo to you via the zoo. And it's just, there's so many gaps. Like, for instance, they'll tell you in evolution that it's like, oh, well, single-celled organisms, the LUCA, the lowest universal common ancestor, was some kind of amoeba-looking thing, right?
And it's, of course. So,
that's great. And evolution's never stopped, in theory, as far as we know, right? So single-celled organisms, and I actually heard somebody put this together so cleanly that I'm going to borrow it, and I can't remember his name. He's a fabulous gentleman. And he said, okay, single-celled organisms evolved into multicellular organisms, right? You go, okay. So there were one-celled organisms, and now we know what life is, right? How many cells are in your body? And I will tell you that the smallest plant life form with the fewest number of cells is duckweed. And it's in the thousands, tens of thousands, right? The smallest animal side of it is a rotifer. Again, thousands of cells. Name me one two-celled organism. 3, 5, 20, 100. They don't exist. So if evolution's never stopped, why don't we have all the other ones? Now, fully acknowledge that there are things that are colonies, but within a colony organism, each individual cell is self-sufficient. It need not have the rest of them. It could survive on its own.
Okay, wait. I haven't heard this before. Tell me if I'm following the logic. Since we still have single-celled organisms, which I'm pretty sure we do, it would make sense that we should have some 2 and 3 and all the way to 2,000, 2 trillion right?
2, 5, 20, 200, 700, pick yeah, a number yeah, anywhere yeah. between tens of thousands and one.
So that's,
I mean, this is like a carnival trick. Pick
okay,
a number.
Okay, so it's I mean, that's where the term missing link comes from, and it should be plural, missing.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Wait till you get, you know, the missing link. You know why they call it the missing link?
Because it's missing. Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, roll back. And just, you can go either direction, like I said. Mm. You know, play it forwards or backwards. It evolved. Okay, well, why isn't it evolving now? Why did it need to evolve? Because if you really look at evolution, they say like, oh, it becomes the best thing it can be. Well, then why did, if I'm fully self-sufficient, do I need anyone else? Nope.
Yep.
So why? And I love it when they say, well, lizards needed to fly. And it's like, I need to fly. I still don't have any relatives that can fly because airplanes, they make me dicey. You know, it's like, I trust most pilots. Most.
Yeah.
You know, but if I could fly, I wouldn't need that. And I still haven't grown any wings. There might be more than one reason for that.
Okay, well, you know, they have the answer to that as well. It just happens so slowly, of course, you can't see it. Don't be childish about this now.
Or it happens so fast you didn't see it.
That, right? Well, there is the... Well, so, what do you need? What do you like?
Like I said, been researching it for 20 years, right? Yep. And I love those moments where you get smacked across the back of the head with a 2x4. The Cambrian explosion is a massive gap in their theory, because there's no predecessors to that. We find a layer, mm-hmm. and we won't go into the circular logic of how do we know how old the layer is because of the F fossils in it. How do you know how old the fossils are? Well, based on the layer they're found in, right?
Yeah.
There's carbon dating, and I have a complete breakdown on that. But if you've ever read The Rape Project, you know, there's some serious problems there. I won't go into it. But when you look at where everything evolved from, every one of those animals that's evolved, no matter where you find them, at the Cambrian explosion, there was nothing, there was no predecessor. It's not a tree, you know, the tree of life. It's a lawn. All of a sudden, we find this one layer and everything goes, and it has no predecessors whatsoever. In any layer, anywhere on the planet, there's no predecessors.
Yeah.
And then they build them and they say, well, its predecessor was this and this. And I watched one the other day and I swear I was laughing at it so hard because they have all these little circles and say, and this animal became this one. They're all blank. Until the ones that you can actually find, and then there are pictures. And if you look at the number of dots versus the number of pictures, you're like, wow, that's a lot of dots. You had to connect a lot to get here.
Well, you can go, anybody listening to this show, and if you're an evolutionist, go grab a textbook, one of your science books, on the evolution of dinosaurs. And they'll show these different dinosaurs. And guess what? They've got dashed lines
and
other creatures, and that means they don't have any evidence of this alleged evolution. They've got dashed lines, so they want you to believe in their dashed lines.
You know, one of the funniest things that came out of that on the dinosaurs, it's like birds evolved from dinosaurs, right? So dinosaurs in general, they have two distinctly different hip formations, and one is bird-like and one is lizard-like. Guess which branch the birds evolved from, by their wild guess. Yeah. They came from the lizard side. And you're like, so they just reverse it. Maybe that does work. They're like, hey, it worked better for those guys. Let's turn ours around too. I'm not buying it. Here's the part that really blew me away about the Cambrian explosion. I thought it was fascinating. And you look at all the animals erupt out of it. And you go, wow, that's really cool. Here's what I didn't know. There are 17 other explosions of life that suddenly occur in the timeline, and you're like, this was never here before. Flowering plants, insects. They're massive. There's 17 of them, and they're huge.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you know, last week we did a show, and we played a short from this secular person who has a pretty popular channel now, and she mentioned the great unconformity. In fact,
oh, my goodness.
We got some really of it cool. right so, there, yeah.
Dwayne's wife had created this on a 3D printer, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we shot it.
I appreciate that. And she talks about the great unconformity and the layers and how you have these flat gaps.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you know, first of all, and she believes in millions of years. And, you know, maybe this happened by a catastrophe. You know, some of them almost have to say that.
But yeah.
She also mentions the Cambrian explosion.
She does.
Still in a framework of millions of years. And it's like, you can't have that. You know, it's like what Bob used to talk about, the shrinking timeline. Uh-huh. And the Cambrian explosion keeps getting the gaps between, the gaps are like almost, they're blurred now. They're,
yeah, you have
the Cambrian explosion and then major other major life forms and body plans. And you can't do that. There's no way that that can have evolved. There's no way you can take and put millions of years on that. No, and you said they've been taught that. They hear it from other experts. So a lot of these people aren't necessarily nefarious. I don't really think that girl doing that YouTube channel is nefarious.
No.
She's been brainwashed her whole life, her entire life through the public school system, into college, all the times her parents took her to the museums, the TV shows she watches.
Yes.
And you start to believe it, because a lot of the guests we've had on this show, and I think you might even be one of them, you used to buy into all that stuff.
I did. There was a point in my life where, that's a longer story, and I got to be careful. I have to have a handler. That's my beautiful bride does that for me, because otherwise I will chase squirrels for hours. And so I caution you to be careful what you start me on, right?
That reminds me, I think when you gave your talk at Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship, didn't you have a sign or something?
I have. My wife was so funny. If you've ever looked it up, it'd be so funny if you could find a picture of it. I have one. But my daughter said, you chase squirrels, Dad, and this is the squirrel you chase. And if you look it up, it's a Malabar giant squirrel. And I swear it was created by Disney. It has purple and red and blue and gold, and it's a beautiful creature, right? And she goes, that's the squirrel you chase. And hours, right? And so my wife
is
actually—
Is that a real squirrel?
That's it really giant. Is. Yeah, it's okay. A beautiful thing. It's a Malabar giant squirrel. My wife actually hand-sewed two stuffed animals together. And the reason she made two was one of them doesn't fly well. The other one, Elway could put a cross on your chest with. So could Peyton, you know.
Well, that's going back to the Elway cross.
And she actually built one of these, and one of them flies like a football. And she would sit in the back of the room, and the one that doesn't fly, she would just give me that look. And she would start playing with the squirrel like this, like, you're squirreling. And I had 5 seconds. And if I didn't, out came the other squirrel, and she would ping me with it while I'm up there telling him, get back. Okay. So I have to have a handler, and thank God he gave me that one. She's awesome.
Yeah. So just so the audience knows, the Elway cross isn't a crucifix. John like Madden, because Elway threw the ball so hard, the receivers, they have a cross on their
on their chest where it caught. Yeah, right. I'm that old. Oh, well.
Well, so listen, if you guys want me to keep you on track, I want to help. I'm here to help.
You so better. Somebody's got to.
If I'm not mistaken, the Cambrian explosion is a relatively new— it only started in the 1960s, and before the 1960s—
Well, no, Doug, I got to correct you.
Well, okay.
It started about 6,000 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, when I heard Dwayne,
the Cambrian explosion, wasn't it about 6,000 years ago?
I know. Depends on who you talk to. There's someone will tell you it's 85 million years ago, but let's not go there.
It's okay. So funny. When I heard you, Dwayne, start describing the explosion of flowering plants,
yeah,
I was like, I remember reading about that somewhere. Yeah. Anyway,
There I go. Squirrel.
Don't distract me from my point. So the Cambrian explosion, as a description of evolutionary biology, only came along in the 1960s. And before that, there was settled science about how all this evolved. And the settled science, it gets overturned within the evolutionary atheistic model all the time. It gets reset. It gets blown out of the water. It gets completely upended is another very popular term.
Oh, you know, the biggest hammer to that was Dr. Mary Schweitzer.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
You know, and I know I've listened to you guys' stuff, and you guys have been through that. But, okay, when I've taught, I got to tell you this, that I've had people in my classes, and I used to do the social butterfly and bounce from table to table. As I would pick, I'm more of an accumulator than a researcher. I actually do find people, and I investigate them first to find out, where's your mindset? How good can I trust the data you come up with in your procedures? You know, so like Dr. James Tour and Stephen Meyer and Douglas Axe and all of those guys, when it comes to the bio side, I've seen enough of their work that I'm like, wow, these guys really have it together. And it took me a whole bottle of aspirin to get through the signature in the cell, but it was awesome. And then when I got to Doug's book of Undeniable, that was awesome. No aspirin needed. That was great. But I studied both and was like, wow, these guys are deep. And so I try and do that with everybody. It's like, where does your science come from? And when I know I can trust that, then I build on it. So when you were talking about evolution and you go, when I would teach those classes, there would be people in there and they would look and they would have, you know, you get the people that are like, wow, and they just sit back in awe of it. And maybe it's not their thing, but they're fascinated by pieces of it. And you get the people that do know something about it and they're like, they get that squinchy face and they're like, wait, I think I get that. Oh, I can follow that. And you show them the failure analysis of how you get there. Then I had the people that were absolutely angry. You could see it on their face.
Yeah.
And you're like, uh-oh. And so I'd write down, I was like, talk to Bob, right? And I'd go sit with him and I was like, hey, so what was going through your head when I was doing this part? And I'd had it said to me, and they're like, my biology teacher was my favorite teacher all the way through high school. And he lied to me and they're mad about it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I understand. And I would always have to do the same thing. And this is the hardest part, even for me, from a scientific standpoint, when somebody's just dead wrong, you want to be binary and go, you were wrong, this is right, move forward. And when they don't, I'm frustrated with that. And the hardest part is to correct them in love. And I am not good at that when it comes to the sciences. But these people would be mad. And I was like, hold on, I want you to consider. And they would take it as a personal affront. Like, he lied to me. And you're like, let me offer a thought. You ever considered that he was lied to?
Yeah.
Have you ever thought that he's teaching you what he believes to be true because nobody's ever showed him anything different? And then I'd always flip the coin on him and go, were you their favorite student? Yeah. You know, I used to spend, you know, an hour after class talking to him. And it's like, have you ever considered you might be the only person that could reach them?
Yeah, good point.
And bring it back?
Yeah.
And that was very hard. Good. Like, so you see it. You see it in the world where they're like, when people find out that it's not true. But that's why I say they're not nefarious. People study this and they're like, hey, this guy who has a PhD told me that this is what I need to study because this is fact. And that's why settled science can be so hard. And there is good science. There's excellent science out there. And there's a great deal of it. So I don't want to say all science is wrong. That is 180 degrees from the direction we should be going. Mm-hmm. The problem comes when the hard science, the good science, says, well, we figured this out. Great. The next rock solid point that we can see is that one. So now everybody extrapolates. They use their, sometimes their imagination. Mm-hmm. They take their best guess. And I'm not condemning them for that. That is a scientific method, right? You go, I have a hypothesis, and then you try and prove it wrong. The failure comes when someone else has built the storyline and your hypothesis influenced by that. And now all of a sudden, it's no longer real science. It's how do I get to the points that they said are definitively true when they're actually not?
Yeah, and you go down the wrong path. You know, it was Dr. Joel Brown that said, really, all science is creation science. And that's what, you know, we're trying to let people know. So I do think this might be a good time for the interesting fact of the week.
I love it when you guys do this.
I had another very deep, meaningful point that I was about to make, Fred. Trying to think of it real quick, and I guess we're stuck. Okay, all right.
Are interesting you intimidated fact. By every time we have this segment and my finger's right on this red button? There's a green button and a red button.
By the way, I want to let people know this is the last day of the telethon. If you were advertising your product or service, this would be the part. This is everybody's favorite part of the show. This is where we think it's possible that hundreds of millions, possibly billions of people tune in just for this segment, and your ad would appear potentially in front of 7 billion people if you were advertising right here, right
Not
now.
Not just sales, whole people.
Whole people. Potential. the potential audience is upwards of 7 billion viewers. All right, Fred, here we go.
Okay, so here is the interesting fact of the week. How many naturally occurring elements are there on planet Earth?
All of them. I never memorized the periodic table only because my science teacher never made me. I wish he had.
But if you did memorize them, would you be able to give the number that you memorized? How many? How many are there? The last one is uranium.
Well, wait a minute. No. Okay.
There are approximately 100. Yes, go ahead, please.
Naturally, I think naturally we're at 127,
and I know the last row is all man-made. We deliberately do it, but its breakdown is caused because the strong force can't hold them together. They're so large. I also know that the last non-radioactive element is lead. Interesting, because that's what we use to shield from everything that is radioactive.
Okay.
But I want to say that...
Well, we got to let Doug take a first crack.
Oh.
Well,
My finger is just is itching right now.
Fred, I just know that it was... All I can tell you is that somewhere in the 20th century, as decolonization progressed through Africa, the number of sovereign nations eclipsed the number of naturally occurring elements. That's all I remember. And there are approximately 190 sovereign nations. So I'm going to guess there's about 130 naturally occurring elements. That was a really long way around to that buzzer.
Okay, so I'm going to give you a shot, Dwayne, and while you're doing that, I'm going to double check my answer. I'm going to just make sure that I got this right.
Because you don't want to accept some expert's opinion on that.
That's right.
You don't go with the settled snow. That's not right. Play nice. Because I want to say it's 109 that are naturally occurring, and that includes the breakdown. I mean, we find the daughter products, and that's how a lot of the radiometric dating occurs, right?
Yeah. Okay, so this is a second confirmation.
Okay.
I just wanted to make sure.
109, isn't it? Is it?
Does it?
Now, so this guess, I know this. Now, a lot of times I don't buzz my guess, but Dwayne, I can.
Oh, you got it.
Well, wait. Now, Fred, does it start with hydrogen and it ends with uranium?
Yes.
Okay, do I get some credit for knowing that? Or
only if you know the other 100.
Only because I told you uranium.
That's right.
You know, I'm in a friendly mood today. There you go.
Okay, I'll take it.
Fantastic.
Okay. I'll take it.
So the answer is
92. Wow. 92. I'm going to write that down.
That's amazing. I know that we filled in the chart up over 120.
We did the man-made ones.
And it's fascinating that we've gotten to that point. But again, you know, this leads into what we were talking about the settled sciences, you know, radiometric dating. What they're doing in the science used to figure out what is in rocks. That is beautiful, brilliant science. That is men and women in their field working very hard to actually find and use this. Now, where does the failure come from? Well, they make an assumption when they go and they do radiometric dating and they say, well, this rock is this old. They base it on, well, there's this many daughter products in it. And from that daughter product, there's only this quantity of parent product. And so it's this old. It took this long by half-life to decay to this. Yeah, and here's
like an hourglass, right?
Yeah, it is.
There's so much sand at the bottom. They say, well, this has been doing this for this long.
Right. And you say, so there were no daughter products when it began?
Yeah.
Or
they're assuming that. Because if there were daughter products when it began, then you're going to date that thing older than it really is.
Yeah. You know, and that's where the good science with bad hypothetical leaps comes to. And there's ways to prove that. You build a hypothesis, scientific method. I got an idea of that. And one of the greatest breakdowns was we can take rocks from volcanoes we know, Vesuvius, Krakatoa, old ones, right? Recent ones, St. Helens, pick any of that. Yeah. And you date it, and they say, well, it doesn't work on new rocks. It only works on really.
Okay, so guys, I just want to say we should cut this segment out and save it as something. This is one of the most common questions we as creationists get. What about the radiometric dating? Because all of us were brainwashed starting in fifth grade that radiometric dating basically proves God doesn't exist. I mean, that's the long and short of it. I'm sorry. But that was the brainwashing I got in the government schools. Right. Yeah. And so there's the issue is the assumptions and the proof that it doesn't work on rocks that we know were created in specific eruptions. There's proof. All right, I just want to.
So even if we cut this out, I want to go through this because there's some big points. I mean, even if you do this.
Oh, we're not
going
to cut it out. We'll take a snippet of it and we'll make it short on YouTube.
Make this a snippet.
In diamonds. They'll tell you that diamonds took millions of years to be formed, right? Yep. But if you find C14 in it, there's a problem with that because You can't induce carbon into a diamond. Its crystalline structure and pattern is so tight that you can't push one in, right? That's a problem. And if the whole, you know, based on C14's half-life, it can't be. I mean, you can't make that jump to here. And so when they found it, it was actually a real problem. They said, oh, well, that's contamination. Here's a problem. Part of failure analysis is ABA testing, right? We have situation A. We took a diamond, we put it in a chamber, we tested it, came up with carbon 14. Oh, it's contamination. Fine. Same chamber, same diamond, take the diamond back out, close the door, test the chamber. No carbon 14 in the chamber. Okay. Open the door, put the diamond back, close the door, retest it. Oh, 14 is back.
Yeah.
That's
to your point, carbon 14 can't find its way into the diamond, so it's not contaminated in that regard.
Right.
Yeah. And it's amazing how many people, like, you go to the store, you're diamond shopping or whatever, and Ryan and I did a man on the street where we asked people, you know, like this one couple that just got engaged, and say, hey, how old do you think that diamond is? And then, of course, millions of years. And that's what the diamond sellers tell people, because they were taught that, like you said, they're not being nefarious. They really believe it.
Yeah.
And by the way, my wife is always, oh, she's like, oh, no. Because whenever they say millions of years, I'm like, you know, those diamonds have carbon 14 in them, so they can't be millions of years old.
Does your wife do what mine does? She reaches over and grabs my hand and said, don't.
Yeah. So, yeah, and so many people are brainwashed on that, but diamonds can't be millions of years old. There's no way. There's no way the carbon 14 can get into such a hard element as diamonds.
So, yeah, I mean, hard. We get into all kinds of stuff just within that. So again, radio analysis, right? Radiocarbon dating, but let's leave the dating out of it. You can take a rock, and there's different types. You know, you have lead, uranium lead, you have
plutonium.
Yeah, you have plutonium, you have polonium. There's one in strontium, I think.
Yeah.
And I should have had it, and I failed here. So, you know, they say you only learn from your mistakes. I've learned a lot.
Well, you're a failure analysis guy.
Yeah, exactly. And I should have had all of those with me, but there's different decay types. And here's one of those points where you have to go back and do the same thing. I take a singular rock, or at least this is the sample we chose to look at, and you can radiometrically date it. And a lot of them will choose which one. And what's this actually was really fascinating. And the guys that did the RATE project were brilliant. And I read the whole thing. It was like the thick one, aspirin. I went through that whole thing. And what's fascinating is you can take the same sample and you test it with this paradigm, uranium lead, uranium. You can go through all of them. And what's fascinating is they all come up with a different date. You will get none of them. You will never get a radiometric date of one genre to agree with another. They're all dated. And so what they actually do, and you can read this, and this is the part that is gut-wrenching to me, because this is where a true scientist fails. They say, we look for the date that matches the answer we want.
Exactly. And should we try to match it to some fossil?
And the others were just erroneous test results. Yeah. And I just disagree with that. And they should too.
And people push, and they push that whole paradigm on the people. And that's probably one of the most effective lies, is the age of the earth being millions of years. Because I think a lot of people with enough common sense, a lot of people, I think it's easier for them to see through the nonsense of evolution, because evolution is just, it's so dumb.
Well, you know what they say, 99.9% of scientists agree with whoever's funding them.
Hey, and now earlier you mentioned, Dwayne, the hardest thing to do is to correct or admonish people in love. And you guys have mentioned a term a number of times that I want to dive into just quickly. And that term is brainwashed. People have been brainwashed, right? I think I even mentioned it, right? That I'd been brainwashed. The fact is, that's not a good enough excuse. Really, what we've all been is ignorant, selfish, and lazy. And all three of those are sins. Ooh. Ignorance is a sin. Selfishness is a sin. Laziness is a sin. All of them are sins. And so the thing is that we're sinful. And the loving thing to do with someone is say, you know, I realize that you were taught this your whole life, and I understand where you're coming from, because I've been there too. But the thing is, it's because we're flawed. We're sinners. And you need to not be ignorant, selfish, and lazy, and you need to actually look at what the truth is, and the truth is you're a sinner, and then let's go from there. Let's not, that's love, is to let someone know that the reason you're parroting false, settled science is because you're a sinner, and yeah, we can help you with that.
Point. Yeah, you think about like this No Kings thing that happened a week or two ago.
They do know the Kings would shut that down, right?
Exactly. But it's just interviewing people and how they're like, why do you believe this? Well, because I don't know. I just believe it. You know, I've literally that's what they would say. Yeah. There's a lot.
You mean because he didn't primary it and they just gave you your next elector? Oh, wait, no, that was. And then. No.
But it's part of a crowd. It's like, why does the path that leads to the destruction? And Doug, you really hit on that. It's a laziness and an ignorance that's born out of that selfish laziness to actually go out and see what is really true. I know for me, when I first started getting into creation and I found out that the earth isn't millions of years old, I was shocked because I was 30 years. I believed that for 30 years. I thought God had dinosaurs as pets for millions of years. I mean, all these stupid ideas. And I was actually mad at myself. I really was. I was like, how did I let myself get brainwashed?
Yes.
It was kind of less of an anger at the teacher. I didn't even really think of my teachers at the time.
Right.
Or the shows I watched for this. That. I mean, I'm more angry now at that kind of stuff probably than I am back then. But I remember originally for me, it was like, man, I'm an idiot. I let myself be brainwashed.
Well, I want to offer a couple of thoughts on that. They say that in this day and age, with the internet and everything that's out there, that ignorance is a choice. Right? You could choose to educate yourself. So be it. Maybe true. But I found it interesting. I got to be involved. One of the universities I went to, I was always the oldest student. Long story, I won't tell you, but I'm the only idiot you'll ever meet that took 11 years to get a bachelor's degree. But I went to 7 major universities because I chased my wife around while she was in the Army. So yeah. Every time I got to be a senior like 3 times, and I was like, but in one of the last universities I was in, the professors invited me into a discussion, and it was all about electrical engineering, and I found it very insightful. They said, we have a problem. Electrical engineering is a huge field. I mean, really, when you look at it, how much it covers electromagnetism all the way down to just circuits and power and all that stuff. And they said, we have a problem. We either have to teach everybody from the ground up, learn the basics, and I mean learn it, own it, know the knowledge, right? You have to, if we teach them all the way up from the basics, you can't get a double E in 4 years. There's just not enough time to learn everything you need to know. And they said, so we have to do one of two things and watch, because this is what I talked about earlier. You either have to let them assume the basics, and now you have a calculator or a phone in this case that can calculate for you. You don't know where those calculations come from or how and why, so you didn't learn the basics. But if you want to get to the point where the industry is, where the electrical engineers are working now, you have to start on someone else's shoulders and assume that they were true. Now, that's cheating, because in electrical engineering, the beauty of it is physics doesn't change.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, okay, I can swipe the equation and the process to get there. I don't know where it came from, but I can trust that. And that's not a bad thing. That's one of the few places where you can say, like, all right, you can stand on somebody's shoulders, but there's a problem. There isn't enough time to learn everything we need to know. And I think that's what we're seeing in creation models and versus evolution and long-term versus there's so much to be learned, and there just simply isn't enough time in the way we've done it thus far.
Yeah. Yep.
The whole topic is so vast. Evolution versus creation, God versus nothing. It is a big topic, and there's not enough time, at least not enough time here on Real Science Radio on this segment, Dwayne, which means we'll have to have you back in the not too distant future so that we can help clear up some more ignorance right here on Real Science Radio, which is why we're here.
I've caused my own theory. Sorry.
So, all right. Well, Dwayne, it was great having you in studio, and we need to have you back.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Oh, not only that, people, if in Denver, in Colorado, you can have Dwayne come to your church, to your school, to
your groups.
Yes.
Yeah. I'd love to do it. We try. There's just so much out there. And I just, you know, here's the funny thing. I don't consider myself any kind of evangelist, but my wife and I have come, and my daughter and her husband, we're armorers. We're commanded to wear the full armor of God, right? Yeah. But there are some things about this science where they're looking for the enemy, not the people. The enemy is looking for a place to get under that armor and pry it up. And all it needs is the loose point. Yep. I've been through a lot of those battles. I've learned to batten down my own armor and fix it. And what we hope to do is in your small group, in your church, whatever, I want to be able to show you that you need not, God says how many times? 365 times in the Bible, one for every day of the year. Do not fear. Do not fear the science. The science is good. Mm-hmm. Some of the extrapolations are not. And there, we as Christians have no need to fear the science. And I would love to come help you guys batten down, fix up, and harden your armor so that these things don't pry it up and you don't find yourself in a world wondering, oh, wait, is science right? No, God is right.
Yeah.
Amen. How do people get a hold of you? How do people find you besides calling us?
That's rough right now. So we just started an organization, and it's Creation Safari. So honest to goodness, we just got the email established last night. Not kidding. And so I'm getting there, and that's horrible. I mean, you could email me personally, but then you'll get lost in the...
No, I think we have a contact us link on the Real Science Radio web. Yeah,
contact us, or webpage. You can go to youngearth.org.
Youngearth.org does it.
And there should be a contact form there. But yeah, I encourage whoever's listening, and even if you're not in Denver, and ideally in Denver, because then you can come.
Yeah.
It's easy for you to come. But even if you're in Missouri, or we've got listeners in Indiana. I know we've got some in Europe. Hey,
yeah.
If you can fly Dwayne out to Europe.
Hey, I would.
Listeners.
I'm not finding any problem with that theory. I'm the vice president.
On the plane. If you travel that far,
yeah.
You'll get your peanuts.
I'll get my peanuts. No, I won't. Let's check that out. But Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship is, I'm currently the vice president there. And those guys are great that we're trying to grow and become part of that. So the only reason I didn't want to throw that out right away is I don't want to inundate the folks that handle all of that communication, but you got to start somewhere. And so, I'll throw them out in traffic and say, you want to hit that website, Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship is fantastic. And that's what we do. That's what we're trying to get into is like kind of finger our way into all the places and spaces and get there. So
and Dwayne's really great at presenting this stuff. That's where we met at Rocky Mountain Creation.
Didn't we?
Yeah, we had to get you you gave a great talk there. And I just encourage you, if you need somebody to come to your church or your group, your club, whatever it is, your high school, wherever, Dwayne's your guy. He's great at presenting this stuff. He has such a vast knowledge of it. I'm so impressed with your research is phenomenal. And there's so many different topics you know about. So
thanks.
Anyways, we'd love to have you again. We're going to have you on the show again.
Yeah. And just so everybody knows, it's like the other thing that I've done with all of my presentations is I do target them for an age group. So even if it's a youth group, I love doing that.
Yeah.
And man, that is the age you need to get into because
absolutely.
It's more about teaching critical thought and going like, no, listen to what's there. I'm not telling you to ignore what they say. I'm saying, think critically, look at it, compare it. So,
all right.
Amen.
Appreciate it.
Okay. Alrighty. So, for Dwayne Bartley and my co-host Doug McBurney, I'm Fred Williams of Real Science Radio. May God bless you.